Well, with your Bibles open to Ecclesiastes chapter 1 and chapter 2, have you heard of the man by the name of Roberts? Pirate Roberts? I'm sorry, I mean the dread pirate Roberts. He's pretty famous. He's known for the Battle of Swords, where he bested a Spaniard by the name of Inigo Montoya. Then, following that, he's known for the Battle of Strength, where he bested a giant by the name of Fezzik. And then after that, oh, the Battle of Smarts, the Battle of Wits to the death, where he bested the Sicilian, a man by the name of Vizzini. Do you know the Dread Pirate Roberts? Some of you probably do. Here's this figure, he's dreaded, he's feared, and yet as he bests in the sword and with strength and with smarts, he ultimately does all of this to capture a lady, really a princess, by the name of Buttercup. He captures her, or really rescues her. She, though, being captured by the Dread Pirate Roberts, she knows of him because he had supposedly taken the one whom she loved. A man by the name of Wesley. She asks the Dread Pirate Roberts about Wesley, really asking if he would confirm, is he dead? And the Dread Pirate Roberts confirms, yes, he is dead. He can't afford to take any prisoners alive, otherwise no one will think of him as the Dread Pirate Roberts. Buttercup, upon hearing this, looks at the Dread Pirate Roberts, and in tears she says, "You mock my pain." To which the Dread Pirate Roberts says what I think is one of the most honest and accurate statements ever recorded in a story. He said, "Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something. Life is pain." What is he getting at? Though from a story, what he says is honest and accurate and true. Life is pain. And how accurate he is when he says anyone who says differently is selling something. The reality is, as you are here gathered tonight, there are people out there in this world at this moment who are trying to sell you a different message than that life is pain. You students, as you're growing up and you're more and more exposed to the world, there are people out there, many who would try to tell you otherwise and would try to get into your mind that life is just supposed to be all fun. Life is supposed to be all play. Life, anytime problems come up, what? It's the problem-free philosophy. It's just to be Hakuna Matata. It's put before you constantly that the goal in life is to have a life of ease, have a life of comfort, have a life where you can have fun and be entertained. For those of you on social media, the people that are put before you constantly through all the different algorithms and the way they organize to put before you one famous person after another, this figure, that influencer, this picture, that video. You begin to look at it, you begin to see it, and it's as if their life is so perfect. And I want that life. My life is a life of pain, but it seems like it can be a life that is perfect. And yet, student, what's put before you, it is so perfect. In reality, it's too perfect. Because what you're seeing isn't real. That isn't life. Listen, as you grow, middle school into your high school years, high school into college years, you're going to see more and more how real this statement is, that life in this world, Life for you and I on planet Earth, it is a life filled with pain. And I know some of you know that already. Some of you have already begun to see that. Some of you have a loved one who's gotten sick, so sick it seems as if it's chronic, and doctor trip after doctor trip, report after report, people just can't figure out what's going on. You could be a sophomore who finds out that their friend on a Sunday afternoon went down in their house to find their dad died unexpectedly. Not prepared for it, not ready for that, and yet it happened. You could be one who puts all their eggs in one basket, preparing, looking forward to something, applying for something. By all accounts, your resume, all that you've done, you should get it. It should work out. And yet word comes back, you didn't get it. You didn't make it. You didn't get in. What do you do with that? Or now as a student, you're beginning to think about life. You're beginning to look ahead. What am I going to do? What goals do I have? And yet as you go forward, there will be setback after setback. And it just doesn't work out, or someone or something you love is taken from you, or someone or something you want, you just can't get. Life is pain. There's a reason for that. It's because we live under the sun. That's what life is like in this world. And lest we be without hope or just think, well, this is pretty depressing. What a drudgery. God speaks and he gives us a book like the book of Ecclesiastes, which is written speaking to those of us in this world, living this life, life as we know it. It wasn't once always this way. If you think back, there was a time when it was perfect and it was pure. That's how God made this world. Back in the garden, Genesis chapter 1 and 2, as God originally made things, it was good, it was perfect. But because of Genesis chapter 3, man committing sin, sin entering into the world and death through sin, that from that we can begin to see why there are problems and why this life, your life, and my life is our title tonight, that life is pain. So what are we to do with this? Well, listen, tonight we got to speak honestly and directly to you because you're living on this earth. What are you going to do with your life? How are you going to make sense of the challenges and the difficulties that you face? Where are you going to run to? In fact, even just thinking, who are you and who am I as a person? Why am I here on this earth? Yeah, I'm in middle school. Yeah, I'm in high school. But what am I going to do with my life? What is it that I'm going to live for? We got to talk about that. And that's where we come to this book, Ecclesiastes. Maybe it's a book you're familiar with. Yes, it's a book where Solomon writes it specifically to those living under the sun, life as we know it. And if you know anything about Ecclesiastes, you're probably familiar with a word that is repeated again and again in this book. Do you know it? It's the word vanity. Look at chapter 1, verse 2. As Solomon writes this with this unique identity, he wants to be known as the preacher, as if he has a message that needs to be proclaimed. What is it? Well, he says, verse 2, vanity of vanities. All is vanity. It's important that we grasp what he means by this word. He doesn't use the word vanity like, oh, that's vain, that's proud or conceited. That's not what he means. Nor does he mean that things are just meaningless, there's no point to anything. That's not what he means. It's really a word built off of the picture that it gives. The picture of breath, wind, vapor, smoke. If you think of smoke, it rises up. You try to grab it and grasp it, and yet you can't. It's confusing, it's perplexing, hard to control, hard to master, and that's what life is like. Life can be hard to grasp. Life can be confusing. Life can be elusive. Life can also be fleeting. So Solomon says this life, it is vanity of vanities. Hard to understand. Hard to grasp. In fact, not only that, it's a life that's pretty repetitive. Chapter 1, verses 4 through 10. One generation rises up, another generation fades away. Middle schoolers and high school students are here. In a few years, you'll graduate, and there'll be another group here. The sun rises, the sun sets. The rivers flow into the sea, verse 7, and yet the sea's not full. This life that's pretty repetitive, someone called it the treadmill of human existence. It's Solomon's way of saying life is repetitive and ordinary. There's really not anything new under the sun. Oh, there's inventions, there's breakthroughs, and then soon there's another invention. A new upgrade. I point all of that out to simply say Solomon gets this life. What we find in this letter is something that's direct to us. It's meant to help us and help us, big picture, make sense of why is it that life is pain? Again, no matter what we do, we can try to avoid it. We can try to fix it. But he'll say in verse 15, what's crooked can't be straightened. What's lacking can't be counted. It's as if he's saying no matter how hard he tries, he can't fix this problem. So what do we do? And where do we go? Well, that's the problem, that life is pain. And what you and I are tempted to, what's often put out in front of us of what we need to then with our life go after, that's what Solomon's wanting to address. And he's wanting us to see what I'm going to call several destinations. Four destinations. Destinations that in reality you see they're dead ends. For significance and for satisfaction. Four destinations that are dead ends for significance and for satisfaction. Put simply, student, what we're wanting to get across to you tonight is that the life that you have, whether you're in middle school, whether you're in high school, and the people out there trying to sell you, here's what you can give yourself to have a life that is good and fulfilled and perfect, significant and satisfied. You could even add in the word secure. What many will point you to, what you will see others run after, what I'm calling destinations, they're made out to be, oh, give myself to this, the life that I have, that's what I'm going to live for. That's what my life is going to be about. That Solomon is going to make clear they are actually dead ends. Solomon is going to explain, I went down this path. I sought significance. I sought satisfaction. I mean, isn't that what you and I often want? Deep down in the recesses of our heart, I want to live a life that's satisfied, that counts for something. It'd be great if my life meant something and that maybe others noticed. What's the meaning of my life? What's my purpose and my identity? You could put it like this. What's going to bring me ultimate happiness and joy? Is that something you're interested in? Deep down, that your life would be fulfilled and satisfied? The fuel that's going to make you tick and keep you going? Solomon says, here are four common destinations. Yet beware, he says, in reality, they're dead ends. What's the first? Well, we see it in chapter 1, verses 16 through 18. What I'm going to call the university. It's interesting. We are at a point in Ecclesiastes where Solomon, again, thinking big picture, what am I here for? What is my life to be about? He says, what if I try heading out to the university? Maybe if I live my life pursuing knowledge, pursuing wisdom, education even. Maybe we're going to need this again. That's all right. Look with me at chapter 1, verse 16. He says, I said to myself, behold, I've magnified and increased wisdom more than all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my mind has observed a wealth of wisdom and knowledge. He said, I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. What is he getting at? He's saying, okay, I set out to my first destination. Maybe life's meaning, purpose, significance, fulfillment would simply be found in me getting more knowledge. Hence, heading to the university. Again, where Solomon's at, as he's reigning as king, he's got access to all teachers, all knowledge, whatever library he wants to head to, he could go to. All wisdom and insight. You could even think just education. Maybe by means of knowledge, wisdom, and education, that's what's going to solve this problem that life is pain. And listen, lest we think that's something old for Solomon, if you listen closely, there are people who think that very thing today. You wonder why politicians would love to make college free? Many of them thinking, well, if people, society, can get more education, get more educated, smarter, then their problems will be solved. Life will be better. People will be helped. Or there are some who today would do all that they can to get internet access to people no matter where they live on this earth. Why? Many of them thinking deep down, if people can just get knowledge, their problems will be solved. Not really new, something that Solomon's after, and yet he pursues this, and what he sees is, in reality, heading to the university, trying to get knowledge, that's not going to satisfy. That's not going to bring ultimate fulfillment. I mean, he pursues the good, the bad, and the ugly. Verse 17. I sought to know wisdom. I sought to know madness and folly. It's as if he went to the university, he sat in the classroom, then he went to the dorm room, he accepted the theories. He then sought conspiracy theories. You name it, he sought it. And he then says, verse 18, dead end. He says, the more you know, with much wisdom, there's much grief. Increasing knowledge increases pain. He's really quite direct. The more you know, the more you're exposed to, the more you see that life is pain. In fact, think about it today. With our access to social media and the news cycle constantly, isn't it story after story after story? A shooting in this town, an accident in another, a foreign leader invading another country, threat of hostility from another. The more we know, the more there's grief. The more we know, the more there's pain and mental anguish. Again, some of you tonight need to hear that. Maybe especially you older high school students looking ahead to the next few years to actually head to a place like college, which is good and fine. But the problem is, if you think that that's to be everything, that if I can just get a few more degrees, get an internship, get a scholarship, get a grant, get a few letters before my name and a few letters after my name, then I'm finally going to arrive, I'm finally going to be satisfied. Solomon says that's not the answer. You think it's a destination, in reality it's a dead end. Well, where does he go next? Well, chapter 2 will tell us in verses 1 through 3, he goes from the university to what we'll call the party. Maybe life, my life, will be fulfilled with pleasure, having a good time, living it up, and having fun. He says in chapter 2, verse 1, I said to myself, come now, I'll test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. Behold, it too was futility. I said of laughter, it's madness, and of pleasure, what does it accomplish? I explored with my mind how to stimulate my body with wine while my mind was guiding me wisely, how to take hold of folly until I could see what good there is for the sons of men to do under heaven the few years of their lives. You see, and I went to the party. I went to live it up and have a good time, to have fun, and to laugh loud. And yet he says it's like a paradox. The more he sought fulfillment and pleasure, the less that he found it. In fact, I think it's so interesting how in verse 2, he will specifically single out laughter. You could think comedy. That someone can smile, someone can be funny, someone can make the whole room laugh, and yet deep down, though there's a smile on the face, down in the heart, they're not happy or satisfied. In fact, how tragic. Often the funniest people deep down are the saddest people. And those that are most hurting. Makes me think several years back, a comedian many would consider one of the funniest out there. And suddenly news hits the circuit. The comedian's dead. How? He took his own life. You think, how is that possible? That's what Solomon's getting at. To think that life, if I could just have fun and pleasure, and if I give myself to that at the party, that deep down I'm going to be satisfied. He says that's not the case. That's not what happens. Even if you go to seek out the finer things, not only laughter, but food and drink. I mean, he mentions here, I explored with wine, took alcohol, I tried to push it, to experiment, to test the limits and the boundaries, to have a good time. What does he say? You take it all together, and he says it was futile. That didn't satisfy inside. I think, how is that possible? Is that true, Solomon? Sadly confirmed, again, not that long ago with another individual out in the world. Someone that, from my generation specifically, a lot of people really gravitated toward. A figure who was famous, he would travel the world, he was cultured, he knew life, he knew the ins and the outs, and often would be featured going to the most beautiful places on the earth, going to the finest restaurants, having the most extravagant meals, the finest delicacies, meeting the most interesting people. And suddenly news comes out, he's found in his hotel dead. Why? He took his life. A tragic, tragic illustration that while many of us think party and pleasure, that's the destination, Solomon says, no, friend, that's a dead end. Well, third, I think I labeled it the home. You could really put in the word the estate or the mansion. Maybe you thought, well, if I can just accumulate some possessions, and with my life, if I can get enough money and get lots of property, lots of possessions, own a lot of things, then I'll be satisfied. That's going to bring me significance. Solomon says, that's what I pursued. For a season in my life, that's what I pursued. What some have called the lifestyle of the rich and the famous. And again, you go back to the day of Solomon as he's king, the nation of Israel, arguably the most powerful nation on the earth. He, maybe one of, if not the wealthiest individual ever to walk on the earth. And what did he do with that? Look at verse 4. He said, I enlarged my works. I built, notice, not just house, but houses for myself. You know, what would that be like? I planted vineyards for myself. I made gardens and parks for myself. I planted in them all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water for myself. Oh, by the way, they were used just to irrigate a forest of growing trees. Back in the ancient world, what was so common throughout the ancient world, he said, I bought male and female slaves. I had homeborn slaves. He says, I possessed flocks and herds larger than anybody who came before me in Jerusalem. I collected silver, gold, and treasure. I mean, does that get your attention? Wouldn't you want that? Oh, wouldn't it be great to have the large estate? Wouldn't it be great to have all the possessions that I could ever want? All the silver, all the gold. Not only that, he'll even say in verse 8, I had male and female singers and the pleasures of men, many concubines. Again, here's someone, to put bluntly, I mean, everyone would be following on social media. Lots of subscribers to this page. Maybe for us, deep down, we want that, we crave that. We think, if I could have that, then I'm going to be happy in life and be satisfied. I'm going to work as hard as I can. I'm going to save up as much money, thinking that I will be fulfilled if I could just accumulate these items. Maybe again, what's put before us, the images, the fashion, the jewelry, the celebrities. Maybe I don't have it, but I want it so bad. And yet, is that going to satisfy? Is that going to ultimately make someone happy? He tells us in verse 10 and 11, he did not hold back, he pursued it all. But when he considered all that he had done, all that he had exerted, all was vanity and striving after wind. And there was no profit under the sun. We look at that and think, that's the destination. That's what I need to go towards. And he says, friend, that's a dead end. Don't go down that path. It was mentioned earlier, I grew up in the state of Washington. Yes, I did. Go Zags. Moved here in high school for North Carolina. Then for a unique period for college and then for seminary, I went out to California, specifically to L.A. Now, I know what some of you are thinking. California is crazy. And it is. But L.A. is awesome. I love L.A. You head out to Los Angeles, and there, oh, there is a place. You think of movies, music, shows, sports, the who's who, people traveling in and out of that town. You spend some time out there, and people, they may not be that famous person, but a good number in some way have connections to them and maybe work for them. And I'll never forget, I had a professor who also was a pastor. One of the ladies he was pastor of, she worked for, he just simply said, this female, this lady who was a famous Hollywood celebrity, a singer. Someone that probably every one of us would know. Someone who had won many awards and Grammys. Someone who all would look at her and say, she's beautiful, she's rich, she's got it all. And yet what no one saw was what this other lady who worked for her saw. That many days as she would head to work into this celebrity's home, she'd look and she'd see this celebrity laying in her bed sobbing. Alone, deep down empty. That really behind it all, beneath it all, again, another illustration that this destination ends up being a dead end. Okay, well, what else? Fourth, he says, maybe let's head to the office. Maybe with my work, my job, my labor, that's what's going to bring me fulfillment. That's what's going to satisfy me. Some of you right now probably are already looking ahead, having some interests. If I can, I'm going to go this path. That's what I want to do with my life. That's what I want to do for a living. And Solomon says, listen, that's good and that's fine, but be careful that you don't make that your main goal and life dream, this destination. Says because it too ends up being vanity. I mean, one, he says in verse 16, there comes a day when you die, and all that you worked for, it's gone, and you end up being forgotten. And then he says in verse 18, all that you work for, you maybe build up your wealth. You put all your life into building your business and your company. And maybe you're even thinking, okay, it's not for me, but I'm going to do it for others. I'm going to lay all this up for my family and for their future. And then I'm going to die and it's going to be passed to them. Solomon points out, yeah, that happens, but all that you work for, as it passes out of your hands into someone else's hands, you don't even know what they're going to do with it. You spent your whole life trying to build something. It then is passed to someone else. They may not even care about it. And he says they might even ruin it and waste it. He says, verse 19, who knows whether it's going to be going to a wise man or to a fool? You work so hard with your work and your savings, and it goes to the next person, and it's all thrown away. You say, oh, I don't care. I'm just going to double down, and I'm going to work hard and find fulfillment. He says, verse 22, what does a man get in all his labor? In his striving, which he labors under the sun. All his days, his task is painful and grievous. Is the office going to satisfy? Work going to satisfy? Solomon says, no. What else then is there? Maybe you're not tempted towards one of these destinations, but there are others. Maybe you're sitting here thinking, it's the athletic field. I'm going to work hard with the sport that I love, and on the field or on the court, that's going to be my identity. That's what's going to satisfy. Maybe for some of you, you're here thinking, no, it's going to be on the online stream. I'm going to build my followers, get my subscribers and my supporters. Then I'm going to arrive with significance and satisfaction. Maybe you're sitting here thinking, oh, the destination is simply the wedding island. If I can just find that person and get married, then my life will be fulfilled. Then my life will matter. Or like so many today, oh, it's the overseas trip. I'm going to travel. I'm going to see the world. I'm going to go and enjoy it all. And we take these things, and when we think of life and that life is pain, we're tempted to go towards these destinations. And yet each one of them, what do they end up being? A dead end. You think you're going to be satisfied, and listen, it's as if you're drinking salt water. Oh, you can drink it down, but it's going to end up making you more thirsty. Eventually, be the very thing that ruins you. So what do we do? Do we just close our Bible and end tonight? No. Because Solomon, as he knocks over each one of these destinations and shows us they are actually dead ends, he's trying to get us to see they were never meant to ultimately satisfy you. They were never intended to be that which you put your identity in and draw your significance from. That the problem is us taking these things and making them ultimate, making them everything, as if that's what we are to live for. Solomon says you can do that, but it's like building your life on a bubble. One day that bubble will burst. And I'll ask you directly, is that what you want with your life? Do you want to build your life on one of these bubbles? That some point, sometime, it will burst and all come crashing down. What else was there? Oh, look with me at the end of chapter 2. What else is there? Rather, we say, who else is there? Life is pain. That's the reality. What is the solution? Solomon tells us 3 times. It's found with God. That we're looking in this world for meaning and significance and satisfaction and fulfillment and ultimate joy and ultimate happiness. And he says, you're not going to find it under the sun. You got to look beyond the sun. You got to look up to the one who made you, the one who cares for you, the one who actually has given all of these things in life as gifts, and you're to see them as gifts and trace it back to him. And who is this him? Oh, it is the God who made you, the God who made this world and all that is in it. All that we have, all these gifts, he says, they're from the hand of God. And look with me at verse 25. Who can eat and who can have enjoyment without him? You middle school and high school student, what I'm pleading with you to see tonight, yes, there's the rain. Yes, there's these distractions. But you got to grasp with your life and where it's going to head in the future, if you want it to matter, if you want it to count, if you want deep down inside to find that significance and find that satisfaction, you have to look up to him and find your all there. That's where you find fulfillment. That's where you find enjoyment. But it has to stop us first in our tracks, because when we do look up to this God and we look at ourselves, quickly we realize there is a problem. Life is pain, and the problem's inside my own heart and your own heart. That every day when we commit sin, it's sin and evil committed against this very good God. That should stop us. Yes, even as a middle school and high school student, you may not be that person out there who's committed all the crimes, yet already inwardly you've sinned against him. The very God who is keeping you alive, the very God who's provided all of these things. It means we're to stop. It means we're to look up. It means we're to ask him, God, forgive me. God, change me and save me. God, would you rescue me? Even to pray a prayer so simple. God, all my life I've been living for me. But it stops now. God, I want to live my life for you. You pray that. You give yourself to that. Then, under the sun, while life is pain, you begin to see and be satisfied in the God that made you. The God who knows you. You know him. You then even know who you are. You know, it's put really quite simply. A Christian said this long ago. Speaking of God, he said, you have made us for yourself. And he said, our hearts are restless until they find their rest in you. If you're here tonight and your heart's restless, and you think about these destinations that are dead ends, let that drive you to Him, that your heart would finally find the rest that it's longing for. And then, then, tomorrow morning, Jonathan's going to walk us through how then do we trust this God. Tomorrow night, we're then going to walk through how do I remember this God. But it all starts with looking to Him and our heart resting in Him. Father, we come to you tonight, yes, excited for winter retreat, yes, speaking honestly and directly about the life that we have, a life that often is pain. It hurts. Deep down, we're sad and we have sorrow. Why? Because we've committed sin and we live in a world that's fallen. Oh Lord, our prayer and plea is that you would help these students not give themselves to the very things that one day, like a bubble, will burst. But that they would look above the clouds, above the sun, to you. And finally, Lord, give their hearts totally and immediately and entirely to you. That's our prayer. We ask this for Jesus' sake. Amen.